This show is furnished by Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn.
It's time for Gervy's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervy. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. Joined today by his co-host, radio personality, and television host, Kerry Kasem. Kerry brings a fresh, real perspective to the intersection of law and life, turning Murphy's Law upside down. And now, here are Alan Gervy and Kerry Kasem.
Good afternoon, Los Angeles, and everyone listening all over the world on KBC.com. I am Alan Gervy, the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn. And today, as usual, I am here to be the managing partner of your life. And I'm here with Kerry Kasem. We're both in studio, which
is unbelievable.
A rarity. We're both here. We're are we 6 feet apart?
We're more than 6 feet apart.
No, we're not.
Oh, absolutely.
Six and a half.
Yeah, but that's a pretty, I mean, that's like a 7-footer right there, I think.
That is a 7-footer. It's Kareem Abdul-Jabbar between us.
That's right.
Well, what a show we have today. This is a special show because a lot of parents are very nervous about having to engage in the educational process with their kids coming up. Here in LA, I think a lot of people were hopeful that the kids would be able to go back to school, but it doesn't look that way. In fact, it isn't that way, as LAUSD, the public school, has apparently reached an agreement to do a structured schedule mandatory attendance. That's part of it, as remote learning. And then my kids who go to private school, we just got a email from the headmaster a few weeks ago saying they have no choice. They had planned on having the kids coming in with a lot of limitations and restrictions, but they say because of Governor Newsom's order, the public and private schools will not be able to have in-person classes as LA remains on the watch list, and they cannot reopen. So we are facing remote learning. It was not a great experience back in the spring. And actually, Hudson and Harper are here right now. They're on their iPads in the next studio. We're going to have them come in at the end of the show, and maybe they can talk a little bit about what they are facing as first and second graders doing remote learning for their school. So we'll have Hudson and Harper at the end of the show. To kick off the show, we're going to have Bruce Fuller, and he's going to come on. He's an expert in this area, professor of education and public policy at UC Berkeley's Graduate School of Education. After Professor Fuller talks a little bit about what we're facing here as the school year starts, we're going to have a round table of parents. We have three different parents who are going to join us: Michelle Henry, Stuart Bick, and Eve Canton. They all have different situations with their kids, and they're going to talk a little bit about their particular situation with remote learning and how much they all are looking forward to it and love it. Kerry, being sarcastic.
Yeah, I know.
Do you have an opinion on this? You are not a parent.
I'm not a parent, but I have a lot of friends who are parents. A lot of friends. And my ex-boyfriend is a parent. So, you know, I it's hard on everybody. Some of my friends actually homeschool their kids already and have for years. So it's not an issue for them. But the ones who haven't, or the single parents, they're really worried.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of our parents is a single parent, so we're going to hear from her as well later on the show. But first, let's kick it off with Professor Fuller. He, as I said, is a professor of education and public policy at UC Berkeley's Graduate School of Education. He previously served as the education advisor to the California legislature. He has two books out, Standardized Childhood and Organizing Locally. Really good books that if you're interested in early learning of young children, you should definitely pick up those books. He's an author at PACE, which is the Policy Analysis of California Education, independent nonpartisan research center. Dr. Fuller, welcome to Gervy's Law.
Thanks, Alan. Thanks, Kerry.
You're welcome.
It's great to have you. Now, first, Bruce, we want you to comment on this LAUSD program. It was announced, a lot of fanfare, the structured schedule, mandatory attendance, but there's been a lot of criticism. I know you've written about it. What is only about 6 hours of online teaching, and there's all kinds of limitations, restrictions, and I know you had a particular interest in low-income families and those with disabilities and problems that they may have with this curriculum.
Yes, Alan, that's true. Maybe I should highlight kind of the positive points. As you mentioned up front, the spring months were somewhat of a mess, as I'm sure the parent panel can attest to. A third of LAUSD's kids, for example, barely logged on at all over the 2 or 2.5 month period in the spring. So I think Superintendent Bautner and the teachers union are upbeat about the agreement. It has two or three big advantages. First of all, there's a set schedule between 9 in the morning and 2:15 in the afternoon. So at least families and kids know what to expect each day. There's a blending of whole class instruction and small group work with 5 or 6 kids at a time with their own teachers.
Bruce, can I just remember you're speaking to a lawyer here, so I have to cross-examine you a little bit here. You mentioned about, and you say it in such a positive way, and I like the way you started out by saying there's some positives, 9 a.m. to 2:15. What makes people think that kids, especially ones which, you know, you're really an expert on, the younger ones, what makes you think that they really will really observe a schedule? I understand older kids, but you know, when you're 7 years old or 6 or 7, 8 years old, when you're saying, like the LAUSD talks about, it's like such a wonderful thing that they have a structured schedule of 9 a.m. to 2:15. That's still a problem for a lot of kids to get in front of a computer or take some, you know, handouts and start working.
Oh, definitely. I mean, especially for first and second graders who are going to get bored after about 10 or 12 minutes online, through video conference. So I think the district is trying to honestly help teachers come up with more motivating ways of engaging small groups, independent projects, mixing pre-recorded talks from teachers with video interaction. But I think you're right, Alan, this is going to be a serious challenge, especially for parents who have to get to their jobs. They can't afford to stay home any longer and keep food on the table. So who's going to supervise the kids, how focused the kids will be? It's going to be a huge challenge. You're absolutely right.
Do you agree with the governor and his call on this?
Well, I do agree in the sense that the safety of kids and adults should be the number one priority. I think what's a little slippery here, Carrie, is that the infection rates for kids from COVID are extremely low.
Yeah.
Other states have made a call. New York City is going to open its schools at least 2 or 3 days a week. So other school districts and cities have made a call to reopen on a part-time basis. Alan mentioned private schools. I think there was interest in having private and charter schools reopen.
Right.
Experimentally, but the governor's made the decision to, on a blanket basis, one size fits all, to keep everything closed. But that's going to continue to be controversial, especially in small schools that could probably create safe conditions.
Through all your research, Bruce, and the work that you've done, did you look at other models where perhaps there are a lot of limitations and restrictions put in place, but still have an ability to get some in-school education? For instance, having staggered schedules, maybe meeting outside, making sure that kids are wearing masks 6 feet apart, or more. My kids actually went to a 4-week camp this summer in the whole month of July at their private school, and it fared pretty well. I was a little reluctant to let the kids go, but they went through 4 weeks, and they really did a lot of great work in making sure that the kids were far apart. There were small classes. Do you see any models that may have been preferable in order to at least try to keep the socialization and the contact with other kids and teachers in person?
That's basically what most of Western Europe is doing, Alan. I mean, Sweden remained open throughout the pandemic. That was controversial, but other places like Norway, Germany, they are reopening, so the kids are in school about 3 days a week, or they're even in school 4 days a week, half days. So yes, that is possible. The challenge in LA and Southern California, however, is that infection rates remain much higher among adults, and that has really freaked out the teachers union. And I think the problem that Superintendent Boutner has is he has 11 different labor unions, all of which are very nervous about going back to school because of the infection rate. So in that sense, Governor Newsom is right to try to really keep the pressure on to bring the infection rate down so that the adults feel comfortable. Again, the problem here is not so much the kids, it's the adults who are nervous about coming back to campus.
You know, it seems as though some of the states that didn't shut down, Sweden didn't shut down, New Zealand is fine. The people that actually flatten the curve, you know, it's like, well, let's flatten the curve. Everybody stay home. Let's flatten the curve. Everybody wear the mask for a couple weeks. Let's flatten the curve. Do this, do that. Don't, you know, wear the gloves, wear this. It's getting worse. It's not getting better. Whereas other people who didn't do that, let me say other countries or states that didn't do that, it seems like the actual curve flattened. What do you say about that?
Well, definitely. In the top of the news hour, you know, you all were reporting some decline in cases just right. In the last 2 weeks. So I think Southern California is moving in the right direction, but not fast enough. But to Alan's point, I think we could try with private schools and small charters that may only serve 100, 120 kids each day. Try in these small environments with very young children. Europe started with elementary kids and preschool kids because their infection rates are almost zero. So right. I think we could start in controlled environments and see what works and move up from there.
All right. Well, we got to take a quick break. Bruce, after the break, I want to ask you about something that you have stated in some of the articles. You're quoted all over the place. When you talk about the kids seeing their parents unhappy or anxious and how it inhibits their own development. Interesting comment, and I think it's really relevant in today's world. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC. I don't want to hear that. I can see you in the morning when you go to school. I can see you in the morning when you
horrible.
When you sit in your
sounds
room
like
and turn,
what's happening with Epstein.
Turn on your computer. I would love to see you in the morning when you go to school if my kids, but I couldn't see them just turning on their computer and some of the what they call seat work is just crazy. Like they just don't want to do it. As a first and second grader, they're not gonna sit there and we give them pieces of paper that their teachers have told them that they should do. I don't know. But, you know, I understand we are where we are with this situation. And I'm not sure there's anything we can do about it. But we are talking to Professor Bruce Fuller, sociologist and professor of education and public policy at UC Berkeley's Graduate School of Education. He is an authority. He's written a couple books, Standardized Childhood and Organizing Locally. Speaking of books, Bruce, are you going to, I know you're in the midst of, you're writing another book, but it's not on this top topic. Isn't this really something that someone should be writing a book on?
Oh, for sure. And it's a ripe area for research, and LA Foundations and others are trying to get some research up and going to really document in part the inequalities that are built into online instruction.
You know, before we talk about that, I do want to talk about the inequalities because I know you've done a lot of work on that and it, you know, it's hard for me. I really identify, well, I don't, but I would like to identify with inner city kids who, parents who have a really difficult time. I understand I'm very fortunate in that regard, but others are less fortunate and they have a lot of issues that they're facing. But talk a little bit about what you've commented on in some of these pieces about the attention to childcare, academic supervision for low-income families, and how the unhappiness and anxiety of parents will, in fact, maybe permanently hurt the development of kids.
Well, I think as all parents know, Alan, our kids are super sensitive to stress and anxiety in the home, especially younger kids, say through fourth or fifth grade, but even adolescents are hypersensitive to how their parents are doing, you know, whether, you know, when parents divorce or when parents lose childcare arrangements, when parents lose their job, the Congress is deadlocked over unemployment protection. So unemployment benefits may be running out in the next couple of weeks. And the problem is that this stress, of course, is most intense in working class households. So not only do we have kids that are trying to figure out what to do during the day and how to connect to their teachers, but we have parents under, you know, suffering enormous anxiety and pressure. Some have to get to work to risk their own health. Some, as we've seen in the papers, some get coronavirus, come home sick, and then have to lose their jobs. And all those stressors build up, and that really sets kids back emotionally and socially. And they start to turn off. They start to unplug from online instruction. So, I mean, this agreement is nice, and it's better than the spring, but it doesn't provide childcare for parents. It doesn't provide relief for parents who need to get back to their jobs. And it's those deeper structural problems facing blue-collar parents especially. They really are going to start to drag down kids and widen achievement gaps and social developmental disparities.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. What I mean, if this continues throughout the year, how many kids are going to need to repeat this year? How many kids are going to possibly need to repeat the year before? I mean, this might be a massive problem.
A lot, and that's why I think we've got to experiment in small charters or small private schools, Carrie, to see how we get out of this hole. Because, you know, better off families can finance learning pods. They can hire college students as tutors. But blue-collar parents trying to get back to their mechanic jobs or their nursing assistant jobs, these are folks who don't have many options. And if their kids fall further and further behind, it's going to close off college opportunities. They're not going to be able to graduate from high school. So I'm sympathetic with the unions who want to be super cautious about teachers going back to school, but the costs are going to be mounting for the families and kids. And we've got to weigh that, I think, more heavily than we have in recent months.
And what about socialization? What can we do in order to try and avoid some of the detrimental effects that we know occur when kids don't have friends, especially younger ones? You know, I know, for instance, my kids, they really haven't had a whole lot of play dates, if any. They haven't been able to socialize. It's got to have an impact. What do we do?
Oh, yeah. And I think that's why this learning pod idea, Alan, is picking up speed. It's going to create inequalities, but you got to sympathize with parents like yourself whose kids are just not, they're not making new friendships. They're not working on, you know, learning how to work out problems with their peers. They're not enjoying the joy of, you know, being in school out in the playground. And that lack of emotional support and emotional wonderment, you know, that's so much part of childhood. And that's going to lead to mounting disparities as well. So I think we do have to find ways of expanding our pods, hanging out with our cousins, you know, figuring out who's been healthy for a number of weeks, and then trying to engineer these get-togethers for kids, because all learning is built upon a strong emotional base. And if that starts to crack, it's going to have big effects on kids' learning curves.
And the society as a whole, to look at the big picture.
For sure.
If you had a crystal ball, and I know we're not going to hold you to it, we're starting school. You know, LAUSD has this big plan coming up. August 18th is the start, and it's the second largest district in the nation, serves more than 600,000 students, 1,000 schools, employs 75,000 people. UTLA, the union, has 33,000 teachers. When you look into your crystal ball, we're getting into September, October. What's going to happen? How are we going to correct this, or at least put it back on a track where it won't be a recipe for disaster?
Well, I think, first of all, Alan, we've got to get after-school child care in place. Board member Gomez has been working to get after-school programs in place. This may work for teachers. There's sort of an irony that the district may set up child care for teachers' own kids on campuses. before they do it for families, and that's going to be controversial. But at least it's a step to get after-school care in place so that parents get some relief and can at least go back to jobs part-time, especially if unemployment benefits start to wane. Parents are going to be under enormous pressure to get back to school part-time. Number two, if L.A. County can get off the watch list for 14 days, hopefully the governor will at least allow charter schools and private schools to reopen to build public confidence that this can be done. I mean, we don't want to do it overnight, but come October, November, it seems smaller elementary schools could be back on a complete schedule or at least 3 or 4 days a week to build up public confidence. And then once parents are confident that their kids are safe, once the unions feel like their members are safe, then maybe we get some positive momentum. But it's going to, we have to take some decisive incremental steps in the next 6 to 12 weeks. Otherwise, we're going to be in a deep hole by Christmas.
You know, I've been seeing a lot of the Recall Newsom campaign. I mean, everywhere. You see the bus driving around. You see the airplane flying it. You know, I've also heard from my, you know, I have friends on that are Republican and Democrat. And on both sides, they are not liking what's going on with the school issue, both of them. So I'm wondering how that's going to affect the governor's term.
Well, I Carrie, I tend to feel, I have some feel for the, I mean, the governor's in a tough spot. You know, he's facing kind of reactions from Huntington Beach and people in Orange County. You know, the Orange County school system wanted to try to reopen. That seemed like a dumb move given accelerating infection rate. So I think the governor's walking a very tough line here where he's trying to get the economy back up and running. We have seen some bounce back in employment rates and joblessness is going down in Southern California. But we don't want to repeat what happened 12 weeks ago where we thought we had conquered and we thought things were under control and then infection rates just spiked again. So
it seems like it's just going to keep happening. You know, it just seems like it's going to, unless we have herd immunity. And that's the only thing I've thought. It's like, what are we going to keep masking, keep gloving, keep hiding inside, keep locking down, and more people losing businesses. We think it's under control. We're out again. It happens again. It seems like a vicious cycle to me instead of doing what the countries who seem to have success with it. And that's, you know, just kind of opening it up and letting it hit and going. And I don't want anybody to die. I'm not saying I'm for that, but I'm not okay with living like this for the next few years. I think it's going to destroy America.
Easy question for you, Professor Fuller.
I guess it's more of a rhetorical.
I think it's just a statement. Yeah. I'll give you the last word, though, because we've got to wrap it up. Bruce, what do you think? I mean, you don't have to comment on what Carrie said, but is there hope in the education of our children?
Well, I think there's a lot of hope, Alan. I think if we can open up small elementary schools and again, build public confidence so we can get schools back up and running. I think in the short term, we also have to hold teachers accountable. Principals have to be able to engage in quality control so parents feel like teachers are engaging this new world seriously. So I think we've got to improve the quality of online instruction and start to experiment with reopening small schools to build parents' confidence and the confidence of labor that we can reopen these facilities safely.
You know, that's an excellent point. And we didn't talk a whole lot about teachers, but we're going to see what teachers have in store for our kids in remote learning. And maybe we'll be surprised. Maybe it'll be a lot better. I'll tell you, I don't think they were prepared for good reason in the spring. And it just, as you said, was a little bit of a mess, especially in LAUSD. But there is a lot here on the teachers. And I know a lot of them aren't thrilled about going back into the classroom under these circumstances. So we're going to have to hope that everyone's on the same page and is working hard for the betterment of our kids. Professor Fuller, we want to thank you for being with us today on Gervie's Law.
Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Thanks, Carrie.
All right, take care. All right, we're going to take a quick break. After the break, we're going to have our roundtable, the Parents Roundtable. After the break, right here on Gervie's Law on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Yeah, school's up for the summer, that's for sure.
School's out forever. The next line.
Is that the next line?
Yeah.
There we go. I hope it's not forever. Carrie getting back to her rock and roll roots here.
There you go.
Nikki Six, your former
co-host. That was Alice Cooper.
I was Alice Cooper. I was just reminding you of your last show.
Thank you so much.
Sixth Sense?
Yeah.
That was a great show.
It was fun for a while, yeah.
For a while. It was. I'll tell you, it's not going to be fun once we get back into school for a lot of parents, and for most parents, I would say, me included, and my kids are here. They're in the next studio sitting. I think they've got their iPads out, and they're ready to come on at the end of the show and tell us what they think about remote learning. I don't know. It's going to be that positive. I hate to hear what they have to say. But they'll probably be a little bit quiet about it because I know they don't like to express how wonderful it is for them not to be with their friends and not to be with their teachers and not to be out at recess running around. It's really horrific. And I want to hear from some parents now. If you want to call in, it's 800-222-5222. That's 800-222-5222. I want to welcome to the show now, parents of kids in school. Michelle Henry, Dr. Michelle Henry, is a physical medicine and rehab doctor, and she'll tell us about her situation. Stuart Bick, he runs the company, president of SkyPad, a furniture and design company. And Eve Canton. Eve Canton is a single mom, and she is in law school. So they all have different situations. I want to welcome you all to Gervie's Law, Michelle, Stuart, and Eve.
Thank you.
Hello.
Well, it's good to hear all of your voices. Let's start with Michelle. Tell us a little bit about your situation, what you have going on, and how you are looking to face getting back into school.
Thank you. It's lovely to be here, Alan. So I have a 5-year-old starting kindergarten and a 7-year-old going to second grade. We have experienced LAUSD public school. We've been mostly doing the homeschooling remotely by Schoolology, which has been a bit of a disaster. And fortunately, my husband is a math professor at UCLA, so he has taken over most of the children's schooling. And I do want to thank him because he is wonderful, and we can't do it without him. Start by talking about actually some positive things about remote learning, because I think that is the best way to start this discussion. First of all, I do not miss trying to get to school by 8:05 a.m. because that was horrible. So I don't miss that. And the other thing is our school, I'm not going to say the name of it, all the children would always exercise first thing in the morning, which is something that we loved. So we have continued that with this yoga class and also this thing called PE with Joe, which has been wonderful. I'm sorry that you can hear my children screaming in the background.
Well, we'll get used to that because I'm sure they'll be screaming throughout the remote learning.
Well, you know, so one of the things that, you know, as a physician and as a mother, I really come to meditate on what it's meant to handle. A lot of it has come with, like, trying to understand myself. And I think, you know, there was a New York Times article this week about how to help your children by understanding how they learn best.
Yeah, I saw a lot of this.
Professor Fuller didn't cover, but a lot of it is like personality types, which, you know, I utilize in my medical practice. And I think it's really important as far as, like, you need to know yourself, and then you can try to know your children, and then you can apply some cardinal rules of relationship.
Michelle, you're getting really heavy here. I mean, I totally agree with you, but you know, you're special. You are a wonderful doctor, and you're married to a professor. Not everyone has it as easy as, and I shouldn't say it's easy, because I know it's hard for all of us. But there are people who don't have the ability to do that, and I think we all have to feel, some compassion for others that don't have the resources like you and I do. And I think Stuart does too. Stuart, tell us about your situation in Hayden.
So, you know, not unlike a lot of us, we've just been muddling through the whole process. We have one child, which has made it Hayden. He's a 10-year-old boy. And the hardest part is because he's an only child. There's only so much you can do in general. And this is especially difficult because, you know, the social, emotional aspects of his education are really the things that we're most concerned about. We have a fairly smart kid. So I feel like academically he'll be able to do it wherever he is. But this is his formative years in establishing those basic foundations to having relationships. And that's been difficult. However, as you've all said, we're pretty lucky because my wife and I are able to work from home. And we can continue to do that as long as this takes. So we're in a very, you know, as bad as it is for everybody, we're obviously very lucky. But I don't want my son going back to school unless, you know, there's all the right secure issues. All those things have been addressed. My son goes to a private school, so we're also lucky because they have the means probably to do things that a lot of the private schools can't achieve.
Public schools.
So what? Sorry?
Public schools. You said a lot of the public schools can't achieve. You
right.
You said private.
Exactly.
It's okay.
So, yeah. Sorry. With the public, I said our school has the means that a lot of the public schools
right.
probably can't. And we just, you know, I just brought my son a new computer for the year. He has an iPad. I'm upgrading our Wi-Fi. I'm doing all those things that I know that are challenging for other people. So, and if you have a kid who has special needs, I must be incredibly hard for those people. But that's our situation.
Yeah, let's bring Eve Canton in, and she has a daughter, Marley. Tell us, Eve, about your situation.
Yeah, so I am a single mom. I'm fortunate enough to be able to work from home, and I'm also in law school part-time, which I also do remotely. So I think we're pretty prepared to do remote learning. My daughter is 10, so she's I feel at a good place for this. If she were a little younger, I'd be concerned about that interaction. But my thought process is that, you know, I don't, obviously public schools may not have the means to maintain certain hygienic standards in this time. And to send my daughter to school with, she's raised in a really anal retentive home where we're very clean, very tidy. And to assume that when she goes into a class with 32 or 33 other students, that those same hygienic standards are going to be upkept is just what scares me. And so I am one of those people who is fortunate enough to work from home. And so I can only speak from that space, but I do prefer that we wait until there is better standards in place in public schools so that kids can go back, maybe even in smaller groups, and not run the risk. I'm not worried about children. I know that they are less likely to get COVID, but we have to think about adults and people in sort of those groups that are more susceptible to worse circumstances if they were to, you know, be infected with COVID. But we're ready. We're excited. I've got snacks ready. I've got I also just upped our Wi-Fi. And again, I'm so happy that she's older. I think she's prepared for this, and she does have a really robust family. And so she's been with cousins, and she's been interacting a lot more than some other kids. So I think that we're as blessed as we can be within the chaos.
Really quickly, Michelle, we only have a minute before the break. Eve touched on, you know, she said she's very clean and conscious of all of the different disinfecting and everything. You have a practice that you've dealt with COVID patients. Do you believe that the schools can be up to the standards that would be required to keep people safe?
I think that there are more important questions actually than that, and that has to do with everybody feeling comfortable and that they can trust each other and respect each other and have communication, and then we can talk about the next step. And I don't think it's that difficult to wear a mask and wash your hands. So I think it goes more back to fundamentals of like human communication and decency that we're all struggling with right now, feeling so isolated and understanding ourselves and our families and how we all interact. So I do think it's possible.
Stuart, would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think everything is situational. But I can tell you that I have friends that I'm really surprised how they've sort of interpreted this whole virus situation and how the kind of precautions or lack thereof that they've taken. I think it really has separated a lot of people. And you've really seen, you know, people thinking it's a hoax or thinking it's not nearly as bad. And I think that that's the issue, is can we trust the other person? I would trust you, Alan, but I don't know if I could trust a lot of the other people.
You know, it's funny you say that tongue in cheek, but it's an interesting point, and I think Eve would agree that there are certain people that you just know and you feel you can trust, but others, if you don't know, and I think Eve touched on that, you know, what do you do? You don't want to put your kids at risk or your families at risk. We got to take a quick break. We'll try and get my kids out of the next studio. Maybe we'll get them here on the mic and see what they remember about their experiences in remote learning in the spring. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
The glass is always half full when you're listening to Gervie's Law on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Yeah, we're back. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC. I'm Alan Gervie. She's Carrie Kasem. We have three parents who are talking about homeschooling, the remote learning that they are facing coming up. We have Michelle Henry and Stuart Bick and Eve Canton. First, let's start with Eve. When you think about the manner in which it will be taught, what did you see from the spring, and what are you hoping for now that will be improved?
Well, in the spring, there was one Zoom for the whole week between the students and the teacher. And so that was a little frustrating because I am not great at Common Core, and so I would struggle with helping my daughter with math. But I do understand that the learning will be daily, and so there will be a lot more interaction. One thing, which is an interesting thing, is I imagine that there will be group assignments, and this is where the issue of, you know, which students are giving full effort and which students aren't. My hope is that, you know, there will be sort of a leveled playing field when it comes to group assignments, because I know for me, my daughter gave 110% to those group assignments, and then there were kids who were too busy playing Fortnite or something of that sort. So I just hope that, you know, parents are, as much as they have the means to do so, are really committed when they can to making sure that their students or their children are present, active, and giving their best effort, because it's really important that, you know, this is taken seriously, because this is a year and no one wants to get kept back and no one wants their children to get kept back. So I hope that people are giving as much effort as possible, despite, you know, this new mode.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Stuart, are you planning to do the teaching, or Samantha, or who? Who's the teacher in your household?
Well, we split it. I'm the math teacher, and Samantha, my wife, is the language arts creative one. She handles that stuff. But, you know, it's hard. We both actually have very demanding jobs during the day, so we have to do sort of trust our son. You know, he is a little older, so I would say with your kids, Alan, it's going to be more of a challenge than with ours, because Zoom, as much as my son kind of is over the Zoom thing, and he spent the entire summer doing Zoom camps, which were also sort of somewhat of a disaster, I'm hoping the schools are going to be more creative this year in their approach, because it's hard. And I agree. My son also had a group project, and he did all the work, and the other two sometimes didn't show up, or we're talking about video games. It's just very hard. When the teacher's present, obviously the supervision is, you know, can be handled
you
know, really easily. Some kids weren't even showing up. They were showing up late. They were sleeping in. They were waking up tired. I mean, it's not
No one wants to do this if we didn't have to. We just have to make the best of this.
Yeah. Hudson and Harper just joined us. They just walked into the studio. We're talking about Zoom classes. Hudson, Harper, how do you like your Zoom classes?
I don't really like them because I liked more regular classes better.
Why is that, Harp? Why do you like the regular classes? What do you miss?
Because sometimes you could do like more stuff.
Like what? Like recess?
Yeah.
Well, that's an important point. Hudson, what about you? You like doing regular classes better?
Yeah, I like doing regular classes better.
What do you like about Zoom? Is there anything? You had a Zoom class. You guys had a Zoom class this morning. How was that?
It was good.
What did you guys do?
I had a Zoom class that was about Star Wars.
Yeah. Was that fun?
Yes.
And what about tomorrow? Do you have some Zoom classes tomorrow?
Yeah.
What are you going to be learning tomorrow?
About hockey.
Hockey. So you have Star Wars and hockey. Harper, what did you have this morning?
I had an acting class.
You had an acting class over Zoom. And how was that? Did you like that?
Yeah,
it was fun, huh? So you guys are adapting. Carrie, there's a call. You wanted to take Jamie?
Yeah, we had a few calls, but Jamie, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, so we're talking about online education and some of the mask issues, correct?
Well, I mean, that's
why. I don't know. Are you listening?
Are you listening? Yeah.
we're not talking about the mask issues.
Just the fact that.
Do you have kids, Jamie?
I have four children, and one has special needs, and I've been a credentialed teacher, a clinician, I'm a researcher from USC. I own schools and mental health clinics, and I was just confused. I am listening, but I heard the cute little girls come on and talking about their online classes. So I just, from my background of being a parent, I mean, the big issue here that really we're talking about was schools are keeping them safe and the efficiency, and I've done my due diligence, and I've got quite a bit of research on the issue.
Okay.
What's your opinion on it?
Well, do you have a question?
Yeah,
a few minutes.
Well, I guess the question is, are people really doing their research? Because we've done research and we've discovered, the annals, a lot of the journals are retracting in the internal medicine, the Center for lots of issues that actually the children are safe to go back to school.
Okay. Well, thanks for your opinion. Stuart.
Not opinion. This is research from Center for Disease Control, NIH, all peer-reviewed journals.
All right. Well, we're talking about parents and kids right now. Stuart, let me just ask you before we let you go, what do you see in the future? Again, I always like to ask people in the crystal ball, do you have any idea now? Your son goes to a private school. Is there any communication you're getting from the private school as to when they can go back, at least on some kind of hybrid basis?
They're just taking it as it comes. I think they've given us that the month of September is going to be remote learning, and they're waiting for guidance from the state. So if the state says it's okay, then they will entertain. There's been all kinds of Zoom meetings about it with the school, and the parents, different suggestions, which they're trying to implement, they have a lot of outdoor space, so maybe they can do outdoor learning, split the classes up, it goes all the way to high school. So there are different, needs at different levels.
Yeah.
But all they've told us at this point is, so they're going to reevaluate, the month of September is going to be remote learning.
And Michelle, for LA, and we only have a minute or two, LAUSD, what are you looking at when you think about the future?
So for us, it's based on understanding ourselves and our children and our own limitations. And I rely on Myers-Briggs personality testing and archetyping quite heavily for that. And then I really do trust Austin Buettner, and I do think he's doing his best. And I think that the teachers and the teachers' unions are doing their best. And I think that we all have to first, number one, know thyself. I was raised as a swimmer and a lifeguard, and we have this saying, reach, throw, go. And I think that with our children's education, we have to make sure that we are doing that.
Okay.
Like before we jump into the pool, as my children are doing right now, have we thrown the resources that we have before we go?
And yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I got to move on. Eve, last word.
I'm looking at the data. I'm relying on science, and I'm relying on our officials to make the right decision. But I'm in no rush to put my family or my daughter in any harmful situation. And so we will just go with the flow as long as we need to.
Michelle Henry, Stuart Bick, Eve Kent, I want to thank you so much. We're wishing all of you, your families, your kids well as they start back to school in a couple of weeks. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Hudson and Harper, we only have a couple of minutes. What are you most looking forward to when school starts? Harper?
I'm looking forward to seeing my friends.
Yeah, me too. I really want you to see your friends, and it's so important. And what about you, Hudson?
I'm looking forward to seeing my friends too.
You know what I'm looking forward to? I'm looking forward to people actually doing their homework and looking at statistics.
So, yeah, Hudson and Harper, let me ask you, when you are doing your Zoom calls, is it hard to focus on the computer or are you getting used to it?
I'm getting really used to it.
What about you, Harp?
Well, sometimes it's hard and sometimes, like, it's easy.
Yeah. So do you think that you can, how many classes would you say you could do on Zoom a day? Let's just pretend like you had one, two, three. How many do you think you could do?
I think three.
Three, that's a good number?
Yeah, I think three too, because one time I actually did three.
You did three?
Yeah, because I had two, but I did my Girl Scout, so I had three.
Oh, that's good. And what about you, Hudson? Have you ever had three?
Yeah, I've had three a few times.
Yeah. Well, we want you to do really well with whatever schooling you have. Are you looking forward to getting back? Or are you loving the summer?
I'm looking forward to getting back.
Yeah, I know you love school.
I think most kids are. Yeah. Kids like to play with other kids and to be with other kids.
Yeah, and they love school. So I know my kids do. Harper, you love school, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I want you guys to do really good. You promise you're going to do good and you're going to have fun in school this year?
Yeah.
Regardless of wherever it is, right?
Yeah.
You know, I love when you guys are on the program. Thanks for coming with me. And we're going to go and get some Tito's Tacos now, aren't we?
Ooh.
Yeah.
Tito's Tacos.
You excited for that?
You know the song?
I don't.
Oh. Okay,
is this
fine.
The song?
No.
All right. Thanks for listening to Gurry's Law. We'll see you next week.
This show was furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.